Welcome to this new episode of the Swift Academy podcast, season two. Today, I'm very happy, really. I'm very happy to be with Ioannis Orlandos, that is member of the Android work group at Swift.org and also CTO. And I'm very happy that he accepted for the first time that he will be with us at the Swift Academy podcast. Hello, Ioannis, and how are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. And thanks for inviting me forward to the podcast. Yeah, we released the Android SDK just shy of a week ago. And I've been incredibly blown away by the response that we had over the past week or so. I think my phone was buzzing every 15 seconds or so. So
Yes. The number of notifications. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we have a lot of section in our episode related to the origin of the project, some technical deep dive with what we call low-level communication with operating systems, some things, and how you handle your team at Android Work Group, your perspective, something that you look ahead. Hopefully that we try to have a response for this different question. That's why. Before we come to drift out in technical things, could you tell us about your journey, how it started with the Swift Android SDK, and how the organization was structured and how people can join this, what we call the Android group now?
Yes. So the Android work group was actually is made up of a lot of members, right? Some of them are already known to have worked on Swift on Android for a long time. For example, Finn has made his own Swift toolchain and SDK for Android and has maintained that for a couple of years. But it's been up and down in terms of stability because, you know, package offers don't support recognize the SDK that he made. So because it's unofficial, it's not part of CI, and because it's not part of CI, packages tend to fail.
Okay.
So it was very hard to take it off the ground without official recognition. And then there was a browser company who have made various web browsers by now, Arc and Dia, and they were also interested in Swift on Android. .skiptools are building Android developer tools in Swift. So there were already a couple of parties that were building their own islands for Swift development for Android. And then there were some companies that already adopted it internally, but never published much, like Readle. They, I think, have been using Swift on Android since Swift 3 or Swift 4. So very early days. But what I recognized at some point was that there were a lot of small islands all across the ecosystem and nobody really banded together. So whenever someone wanted to make a change or whenever you wanted to support Android in your project at all, you needed to choose whose toolchain to use. And then if you chose a toolchain, you needed to kind of, it's a lot of DIY. So like how to even set up a toolchain was a real hassle. So I thought, well, why don't we unify this? So let's look at back a year or so ago. I was on the Swift Server Conference, which is excellent, by the way, for anything non-Apple Swift development. I spoke to Conrad, who was at the conference as part of the Swift Server work group. And he said, I asked him, well, you were involved with Scala, or Akka, Akka. He wrote a lot of concurrency stuff in Akka and Java.
Okay.
And I said it to him, do you think an Android work group is something we can take off? And he said, well, you need to do a lot for that. You need to have toolchain support, standard library support, and then you need to have some JNI interop. And I said, well, we already have something for JNI interop, and I think almost everyone does. And he says, you're going to like the talk that's next. And 10 minutes later, we announced Swift Java, which at the time didn't support Android, but it was, you know, a major first step for us to actually make Swift on Android feasible. So I thought, well, the stars are aligned, basically. I have to make this happen. Over the next few months, I started gathering some ideas on how I wanted to make this take shape. And then at some point, I think in February or March, I reached out to every single member that I deemed was interesting for this work group at the same time. And I told them, I'm going to start a Swift Android work group. Do you want in? And I think everyone replied within a day or so, and that's just when it established. At the time, it was still unofficial, right? Apple and the Swift.org project didn't recognize it. They didn't even really know it was happening. Okay. But we announced ourselves on the forum, and from there, it took off pretty fast.
It was a great, great experience. And people who want to join the Android work group, it's opening or something?
Yeah, it's a completely open group.
Okay.
So if you're interested in Android development with Swift today, if you want to see what the current status is, have some topics to discuss, like future directions for the project, or you want to contribute with documentation, tooling, IDE support, we have a bi-weekly call on Wednesdays, and anyone can ask for a link to join the call. It's completely free to join.
Okay, great. That comes to another question about the announcement that was last week. As you said, the project take, I think, years. There is some pre-project that you that was made to prepare with some chance the arrival of the Swift Android SDK. You speak about the history, but some project like the Swift Java project, this kind of what we call the pioneering project that lead to help you. What was the turning, the moment that the Swift.org decide, okay, we can officially go to inform the community about the project? What was the decision? It was only by you, the Android group, or with some communication with the Swift.org, some other developers from the Swift Evolution program?
So when we launched the Swift Android work group as an unofficial team, we were really about, let's try to get all of the ecosystem to support this. But the buy-in from Apple and Swift.org was incredible. So within weeks, we had a conversation about making it official, making a charter. And from there, we set up CI scripts for the Apple folks to run, so they could verify their new patches don't break Android support. Whenever the Android support is broken, then someone from the Android workgroup can assist them with fixing support or finding an alternative solution. So really, from the point that we were official, that was the turning point, because at that point, it was widely accepted this is a new direction for Swift, like a new avenue for Swift to enter, which opens up CI and all of the other stuff that can be set up. So once CI is set up, then we're not behind the facts, we're ahead of the facts, right? Before a new Swift release is released, we know if it will work on Android or not. So that's really, I think, the crucial turning point. And I think that's only been a month or two ago that we really got there. And it's been only a few weeks ago that we actually had our first CI properly set up with all of the bill of materials sorted and all of the legal and organizational tediousness out of the way. And from there, after all of those core pieces are in place, we could release the Android SDK pretty quickly, which we did.
Great. You have also, when I try to prepare the episode, see a very important, remarkable statistic about 25% of the what we call the package in Swift Index was compiled at now. Really very great statistic, because we have a lot of things. We have, I know that there is some things that is not already compiled. Like, I think the Swift concurrency is not already supported. Maybe you would speak about other things that is not already supported. But my question, how do you, you can achieve all this? There is a lot of things in the foundation, UI kit, in Swift UI, etc. In little period of, I don't know, 5 months, 6 months, you have this percentage of 25% of all the Swift compile indexes.
Yeah, so the Swift package index really focused around Swift and not Objective-C, right? So okay, a lot of old packages probably don't show up in that registry that are mainly UI kit focused. But what you see in the ecosystem is, because Swift on the server on Linux has been so well-developed over the past 10 or so years, that a large portion of the packages that you see on Swift Package Index are actually also supporting Linux and Swift on non-Apple platforms, but they don't usually support Android. So what you need to do is whenever you import Foundation, for example, on iOS or macOS, you also get most of the C and C++ code, like opening a file or a socket or stuff like that. Most of the effort that we needed to put in was supporting those core components. So making sure packages like Swift Neo, they support Android SSL, cryptography. And because most of the Swift server ecosystem already uses these packages, they kind of get Android for free. Because I think 40% or so of the Swift package index today supports Linux. Out of that 40%, 25% of those are also Android. Great. That means that there's 15% more to win as well.
Yes.
And then also packages that don't yet support Linux, that can support Linux and Android in the future.
Mm. We'll speak about this in the when we look at what's your roadmap next with the next releases. Maybe we can deep dive in some technical things related basically to what I called the low level, system level. I think that the SDK, there is a lot of things that was wrote using C++. Which part of, what are the language that used in the, first of all, in the Android Swift SDK, and what kind of technical obstacle that you have faced when making this realizable?
I think, so I haven't been directly involved with the more complex projects that are currently published directly, right? I didn't do the development. I think Finagolfin and Mark from SkipTools, Finagolfin is independent. They both put in a tremendous effort for CI to support. So Swift has excellent C and C++ interoperability already.
Okay.
I've used it many times before. So there aren't really many complexities in calling those libraries today. I think the main difficulty that you might have when you want to talk to these libraries is that we don't yet support CMake in Swift Package Manager. So many C and C++ libraries are actually built using CMake, which makes it very hard for you to integrate these projects into Swift.
Okay.
Because you need a package.swift first.
Mm.
The main technical obstacle we had when we were trying to build the SDK, I think, was solved by Matt when he added the JNI support for to Swift Java. Because we were kind of thinking that we needed to tackle the SDK first and then JNI. Mm. But Matt made an incredible effort to support JNI in Swift Java and added so many new features that Swift Java didn't have that are actually making Swift on Android as capable as it is today.
Okay. And what is the importance of JNI? Because I think that there is a kind of a bridge when you try to compile what is wrote in Swift to be interpreted by the JNI in this work. And the work that was made in the Swift Java packages help you also to go further with that. And
so there are multiple layers to this, really.
Yes.
So Swift itself is a native binary, right? So it doesn't compile to Java. It doesn't know about Java and the fundamental bits. It just knows about maybe talking to C and C++ at best. So when you're building Swift on Android, you're really talking about the native binary, first of all, which means that you can write an app without Java or a command line utility for Android, just the way you would on Linux. So that in itself is not interesting for Android developers, but it's the foundation of what the Swift SDK for Android does. It doesn't do anything with Java. It helps you compile native binaries that run on Android. So when you have built an Android app, you can interface between Java and your Java environment, Kotlin or whatever, and a native environment using JNI, the Java native interface. And this allows you to call C and C++ libraries, such as, for example, MPEG, or some of the more maybe cryptographic libraries like OpenSL. Those can be integrated in a C library, which you then call from Java. Now, using that same principle, Swift Java allows Java to call into Swift using JNI and vice versa. So Swift into Java using JNI, because it's a bidirectional bridge.
Okay.
But on top of that basic JNI interface, Swift Java builds a lot of abstraction layers for you that you don't need to deal with, like the ability to copy data around more easily, maybe generating classes and functions. So if you have a Swift class that it chooses a class in Java, if you have a Java class that it chose in Swift, it really generates a lot of the boilerplate for you to make those function calls, just regular function calls.
Mm-hmm. And the kind of types that we have, difference about types, how was like double int, this kind of primitive types, there is no problem when we try to, because if I understand you very well, there is no this kind of transformation of code to Java. You will try to write in Swift, and after this, we have a binary in Swift. And
yes,
this binary will communicate
Swift.
will communicate with the JNI. There is also no problem. We try to use our primitive types. We have no problem with conversion to how the double is in Java, etc.
There is one exception.
Okay.
The Java by itself doesn't have unsigned integers, I believe. So converting those can be risky, right? Because you might lose the signing bit. Might be used somewhere. That's one thing that you need to tread carefully, although there is a library that solves that. I think Guava built in unsigned integer support into Java, and Swift Java has support for Guava as well.
Okay, great, I think.
But other things like memory management.
IRC, for example, the communication between IRC and what we call the garbage collector in Java. We use the garbage collector, but the same, the equivalent is ARC. And
yes,
how things work?
So I'm not the one who wrote this. Sorry if I butcher the details.
Okay, no problem.
But whenever you hold a reference to Swift in Java, it increments the counter using unmanaged, I think, unmanaged classes.
Yes.
So it manually increments and decrements the counter whenever it gets passed into Java. And vice versa, if you have a Java type, then you tell the garbage collector you have a reference with. And you don't manage this yourself. It's all handled by Swift. Swift Java, I should say, transparently. Mm. So you can be pretty worry-free when integrating the two code bases and benefit from both.
Okay, great. I have some question about Swift UI, because
we
develop using Swift UI. How this kind of communication between component rooted in Swift UI and how Android interpret? I know there is a lot of things that like in React Native, Flutter exist already, but especially that we have this kind of declarative API, sophisticated Swift UI. How it was easy to be interpret to run in the Android
so
system.
So today the open source Swift Android SDK does not support Swift UI. There is no UI at all. It's just for sharing business logic, pipes, libraries, stuff like that.
Okay.
But SkipTools actually has a transpiler that transpiles your Swift UI code into JPEG Compose for you. So you can leverage that to get started with UI, bridging UI, Swift UI code to Android.
Okay.
Alternatively, you can use, you can actually wrap the Android SDK, and someone has already done that, with Swift Java, and then you can build your own recycler views using the old Java APIs today.
So
because Swift Java can recognize the Android SDK, it can also generate Swift types for your Android types, like recycler view, and you can plug and play those into, you can manipulate those to build a UI.
Great.
Those are the two paths that we have today.
Okay. But you didn't have a perspective to have Swift UI code directly in the Android studio using Swift. You need to pass by tools like SkipTools and something like that.
Yeah. Swift UI is an Apple framework, and the Swift Android workgroup is not.
It's not
really Apple, so it's, don't get any benefits there. We don't get any extra support.
Okay, I understand. I have questions that come from Android developers that work with me about what we called now in Android 15, the 60 kilobytes in memory pagination. This problem in
64, yes. We have those already.
Oh, okay, great.
Yes.
Because there is
16,
a lot of...
Yes,
the
16 kilobyte. I forgot. The 16 kilobyte memory page is already supported in the new Swift SDK.
Great. Because a lot of developers, Android developers, have a question about that, because especially in Android 15. I have a question about the Swift Java anti-reparability, if I can say it. Swift Java package, which seems for me the cornerstone of the, maybe of the whole project. I know.
Yeah, I think... I'd agree. It's more of a cornerstone than than anything else.
Yes. This kind of automatic, what we call the automatic binding generation between Swift and Java.
Yes.
How things work?
So when you build Swift Java project using Swift PM.
Yes.
I don't recall exactly where it looks, but it looks at your Java classes and it uses JExtract to extract the symbols and the classes and the variables.
Yes.
And then it maps those to Swift types using I believe a Swift build plugin.
Okay.
So at build time, as you invoke your Swift build command, you can actually generate those bindings. And then the inverse is also true. There is a tool, I believe it's written in Swift, that can take your Swift classes and structs even, and enums and protocols, and translate those into Java. Oh. So there are two tools really at play, one for the one side, Java to Swift, and one for Swift to Java.
Okay.
And they just run at build time. So you either implicitly or explicitly invoke those, and that's how you get your binding.
Okay, great. I have some question about Swift types limitation, but we spoke about that. That for me, it's... sufficient for this kind of technical question. And the next section for me about team governance, especially, and collaboration. If you can speak about how your team, the Android group, it's organized. You have a core team, developers that come. It is a small group or a kind of broader open source collaboration. Everyone can come, yeah. etc. I know that
there's a hierarchy to that.
Yes, hierarchy. This kind of hierarchy. Yeah. Can you speak about this kind of hierarchy for people?
Sure.
Because it's important to understand this kind of open source project, how it's organized, and what we called OSS, how we can join this group.
Sure. So at the very, very top, there are two ways to approach it, right? There's the user to the developer, to the maintainers, to the core team, and backwards. Okay. I like to perceive it like core team backwards. So
okay.
At the top of the organization is really the core team. And what they do is they set the vision for Swift as a whole. So not just Android, not just server, and not just the compiler even, but as for the whole of Swift, the whole Swift ecosystem, they are the visionaries, I guess, the people that organize and arrange, that direct the project in their direction.
Yes.
Underneath the core team, there are two main steering groups. There's a platform steering group and the ecosystem steering group. So the platform steering group cares about what platforms do we support, Windows, Linux, Mac, FreeBSD, Android, OpenBSD platforms, right? But then there is a counterpart to that, which is the ecosystem. So within these ecosystems, what tools are there? What libraries are there? And for example, the ecosystem steering group is more about those tools within there. So the Android workgroup falls under the platform steering group because it's a steering, it's we're a platform, right? But there's a lot of inter-discussion between these work groups. So core team, steering group, work group. And a steering group is really about organization again, about how do you organize these groups to work together? What are the goals? What's our next steps in their respective platform or ecosystem areas? Mm. But the work groups are actually the people that are more work-focused, right? They want to achieve things. Work groups are not like... are all voluntary, so everyone collaborates from their interest, either as part of their job or as a hobby, usually as part of their job. And these work groups, they are just focused on their specific topic. For example, the server work group is working on improving the ecosystem for Swift on the server, on Linux mainly, but also Windows, if Windows servers are a thing in our ecosystem soon. So the Android work group cares about Android support, and as part of that, we want to support the tool chain, we want to support IDEs to integrate with us, we want to support building an APK or an AAR. But there is, for example, a new work group yesterday announced, I believe, the build and packaging work group, which cares about building and packaging applications and libraries for various platforms. So when we're talking about building an APK, we're not talking about just the Android work group or just the build and packaging work group. Really, it's a collaboration between these two groups. And when you want to build a container for backend deployments, that's between the backend packaging work group and server, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So there are more of like these overlaps between work groups where a lot of work happens.
Okay.
And then the work group is free to join most of the time. So everyone can ask for an invite, join the calls, help out the ecosystem by contributing to these projects and learning a lot, interacting with other developers that are working on interested in the same subject. And just by being persistently available to the work group, you can become a member too.
Yes, great. And that comes to my question. How contribution and the roadmap, how especially the contributions, because people that come with contribution to involve the project, etc. And maybe it's not aligned with your roadmap. And you have a roadmap of kind of 6 months or 2 months. How you communicate between the core team that give the roadmap, or maybe another person that can say, I have this kind of contribution. I don't know. I want to add support for Swift concurrency in the Swift Android SDK. This is my purpose. And how things work in terms of coordination, roadmap, something
so
like that.
So that's an excellent example. Let's say you do want to integrate Swift Concurrency with Swift Java.
For example.
Because Concurrency and Swift SDK already supported, but Swift Concurrency isn't supported in Swift Java yet. That's the main issue.
Yes.
So what you would do is you would join the workgroup meetings for the respective workgroup or the meetings for that respective project, because some projects like Swift Java have their own meetings.
Yes.
So you join there, you propose your idea, maybe you added to the agenda beforehand, and you get an invite link from the people that organize that call. You just join in and you talk about your topic. Sometimes you're new with the idea and now you kind of need to propose it or get people to ask questions about it, improve the idea. I think for Swiss concurrency, it's a pretty well accepted idea that we want this and we're going to need this. So it's a matter of how do I get started, right? Maybe you already have an idea on how to get started. In that case, you can start proposing pull requests or planning out a roadmap or step by step. Other times you might need some help on where do I even start with this? And the best way is to just within the call, ask the maintainer for input. And then usually you'll take it offline into a chat or a separate call where you discuss what the steps are to achieve this and what work is involved. And then it's a matter of doing the work and interacting with the maintainer or maintainers to get the project off the ground. Even if it's a new project, like a new library that you want to build and maintain, it's perfectly fine to join a work group and propose your idea. Maybe other people are willing to help you out. Maybe other people want to join in. It's just really a flexible, loose soup of collaboration in open source.
Great. And that kind of my last question about this this section about maybe there is any companies that support the project now, because it's not a simple project. It's a project that the whole of your time was in this project with a lot of communication, with reflections, etc. I don't know. Maybe Apple support this. I don't know.
Apple does help a lot, I have to say. They're not directly, they are using Swift on Android, although they use an older version of their own build toolchain. But they want to update, of course, to the latest and greatest officially supported as well.
Okay.
Then there is the Readall, for example, has given their expertise and are contributing, because their company is using Swift on Java now for, I think, 5 or 10 years almost.
Okay.
I think Cricut was a big supporter. They sponsored Fina Golfin's efforts in the Android ecosystem. So they are definitely also very much involved. And of course, SkipTools is a very big player.
Okay.
That's Abe and Mark are I think they're also the founders of the company, but they're really putting themselves down to improve the ecosystem for everyone. And they are putting a lot of their full proprietary product out in the open so that everyone can benefit from it. So it's very respectable.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for this information about how we can join the Android Group company, something that how we handle the roadmap, contribution, etc. It's very important because I know that a lot of Swift developers didn't know about this kind of project and how this great developers, they spend a lot of time of their life to try to improve the language, the Swift language, and also the tools that help developers and companies to create application to their customers. This is, for me, a very important thing, and thank you for this information. That comes to maybe to discussing when you shared your post in LinkedIn, we try to discuss also with my colleagues Android group about the examples.
Yes.
That you shared. This, I think in the in Swift language, Swift repository, we have this repository, the Swift project, we have what we call the Android GitHub repository that shows a lot of projects about using the SDK, the new Android Swift SDK. Can you speak about this kind of example? Because people say, okay, we have only the Hello World. Okay, but there is other example, great example related to GNI, etc. And I'm sure that we will improve with other examples very soon.
Yeah, so there are already other people that want to contribute their example projects. And there was even someone that that has like 10 examples that he wanted to contribute that we didn't get to merge before we published the post. But we're still trying to get those in. Yeah, I think there anyone that's working or even just playing with Swift on Android, if you have an interesting, either a small app or a small demo or even maybe a bigger project, whatever you want to publish, you can work with us to kind of comb through the details. If there are any questions you have, obstacles that you run into, then we can maybe use your examples and your experience to improve the ecosystem. But also just if you have an example that you want to contribute, it would help everyone, of course, understand the scope of things better.
Okay,
we're very open to more input.
Yes, thank you. We'll share the link to the repository that people can check and maybe contribute. And that came to another question about people said, okay, we know that we use what we call Swift Package Manager to handle dependency, etc. And if all our dependency now using Swift Package Manager can be worked fine except something related to SwiftUI and other things, we have a lot of dependency, and maybe we have some native packages that we wrote. There is no problem with using that in Android now, or because you know Swift package when
it's an Android supported Swift package, you can use it today, right? But okay. it needs to compile on Android. But also like Java dependencies you might want to use, like maybe
Gradle.
You want exactly. to, so, and well, Gradle already supports Swift to a degree, but it's not very well supported. Right now, I think we build most of our packages using Swift PM, and then we take the build artifact, the shared object, the library, and we bundle that into your Android.
Oh, okay.
That's the most common workflow right now. So you integrate Swift Package Manager and Gradle, but you can, we're thinking of integrating with Gradle more, making a Android Studio plugin and a VS Code plugin for the Android ecosystem. So you can use your favorite IDE with LLDB. We already have some prototypes working, but it's a bit rough around the edges still. So we need some extra time and people to help with this. The more people want to help out, the faster this project can be released, of course. Yeah, I think that's the main thing.
My question about LLDB and debugging, you know, it's very, very complicated thing. And we try to how we can use LLDB in Android using Android Studio, because until now we can't use Xcode. Maybe it's a stupid question for me. If Apple can to try to add the Swift Android SDK using Xcode.
I very much doubt it. I don't think that's ever going to happen. VS Code is definitely very open to adding Swift Android support, right? The VS Code team at Apple is very open.
Okay.
And in Android Studio, we can build our own plugins for Swift, so you can integrate that. We already have LLDB working on the command line, so we can already debug our binaries.
Okay.
But it's very manual. So breakpoints are the typing over the command line, right? Instead of clicking on your IDE. LLDB already supports debugging other native languages in Android, but we haven't added the Swift language support to that just yet. But that's one of our first next goals. I think the two main goals that are on people's minds are, well, documentation, if you name one of them, but I think LLDB IDE support and improving Swift Java even further with concurrency and stuff like that. Those are our main, what most people think are the main goals. But as for our real roadmap, of course, we need to really just discuss it and honestly see what people end up contributing the most to.
Okay. Thank you. I think that we have finished with this technical discussion and a lot of questions. Thank you, Ioannis, for responding. Now, the vision, the roadmap. I think that maybe I'm wrong. There is a kind of vision document now exists in the Swift Evolution website. You speak about some priority like Swift concurrency. What is other priorities for you now with the Android Swift SDK?
I think mainly it's going to be, well, we don't really have a timeline yet, right? We just have a list of priorities that we care about. And most of these are just openly discussed on the Swift open source Slack. But I think most people agree that debugging, IDE support, and further improving Swift Java are very, very important topics. And a close following to that is more documentation examples, because that helps people onboard into the ecosystem and try it out.
Yes, great. We didn't have now a timeline, but some priority related to especially Swift Java interoperability and something like that. There is no things related to networking, persistence, testing, supporting.
Some people in the community are working on GRDB support, so SQLi database support for Swift, not for Swift, for Android. So it's a very popular iOS library for managing your SQLi databases. We already have it work on Android. It just needs to be patched up in a way that the opera accepts it. In terms of networking, we already have Swift Neo, and we already have a pretty mature ecosystem thanks to the server. UI is a bit of a difficult one, because SwiftUI is never going to be officially ported to Android. At least I don't think so. But there are many community members that are building their UI frameworks for Android, either on top of Java or something else entirely. Swift Skip, of course, is a transpiler to JPEG Compose. It's kind of Java, but it's also written in SwiftUI. So these are just community efforts. I don't think we'll have something official in terms of UI. But that's fine, I think. It doesn't need to be official.
Okay, great. You have spoken about Jetpack Compose in SwiftUI, but you said that there is no, it's not supported now. It's supported by the other company. Sorry for missing the name of the company. Capper Tools. Maybe that come to some what we call community adoption. People that, you know, we have, a lot of ego in the Swift iOS community about adapting other platforms like Android, etc. People that have a lot of years developing using Swift and are very, have a lot of love, to the Apple platform. Do you think that the Swift community will easily adopt this to embrace, if you know, the Android development? Because in every meetups that and conference, you know that people, developers in Apple are really very, very related to Apple production. Okay, it's good. Very great efforts. No problem with that. But adapting, there is, I think, a kind of marketing that should be. Yes.
I think it's an interesting discussion. I think I don't think Android developers will be very keen to embrace Swift, just as much as we're not very eager to embrace Kotlin, right?
Yes. Okay.
Because bridging inherently brings home translation errors with it. And whether you do Kotlin to iOS or Swift to Android, I think Swift for Android, Swift Java is doing an excellent job bridging, but it doesn't feel the same as Kotlin. It's never going to be the exact same. And if you could make the exact same, then there wouldn't be the reason to use the other language anyway, because they're the same, basically.
Yes.
So we already bridge protocols to interfaces. You can implement a Swift protocol in Android and expose that that functionality from Android. So I think the main people that will push Swift on Android will be iOS developers. And I actually haven't had any problem with finding iOS developers that want to be, that are open to the ecosystem. Whenever I'm at a conference and I talk about Swift on Linux, on server, almost every iOS developer I speak to is at least open to the idea of running their backend, writing backend code and running that.
Yes.
Okay. Many people also are open to Swift on embedded, Swift on, you know, any non-Apple platform, WebAssembly. They just want to share the experience that we have and are the tools that we have with other ecosystems. And I don't think Android will be an exception. If anything, it allows us to bring our code and our experience to those ecosystems, right? I don't think most Android iOS developers will want to be Android developers full-time, right?
Yes.
Even if it's Swift. But just being able to share the code and the libraries that you built and the business logic and maybe your Swift composable architecture users, sharing those with Android, I think there's real benefit to that. And I think many Swift developers see that.
Great. There is something, related to projecting that you know with Apple and IBM about backend.
Hitura.
Yes, and there was a lot of problems between Apple and IBM about that. And at this time, hopefully that we have the Vapor community that helped to have this kind of project. You are not afraid that you have the same situation, that this kind of company that support the project now, because Apple, that, as you said, are not convinced to support this kind of project. They have other priority, maybe.
It's not their main focus area, but they're very open to helping us support, helping the community build and support, right? Like, but they're definitely not completely bystanders.
Yes, because the community, when there is problem between Apple and other company about adopting some things, and people, you are okay with me that people, okay, maybe this project will have some kind of problems that will be continue, but now you are very convinced that I'm very convinced, because this kind of problems we have faced in 2006. We know from our that the community will continue with this project, and there is a lot of things.
Well, the community will definitely continue with Swift on Android.
Yes.
But I also think that Apple is a way different company today than it was 10 years ago. If you ask me, when Microsoft bought GitHub, I thought GitHub was dead. I thought there was no way Microsoft would keep GitHub an open source focused company. Mm-hmm. Today, I think Microsoft is one of the most open source focused companies in the world. It's a real paradigm shift. And I think something very similar is today happening within Apple. I'm in touch with open source people and non-open source people within Apple all the time. And it's a real paradigm shift that's starting to happen there, where Apple is actually caring for the community on this level and collaborating. Back in the day when SwiftUI was released, we got result builders, even though nobody wanted them, right? They were only added for SwiftUI. I think there are some merit in Result Builders beyond Swift UI, but really, that was a Swift UI feature. But today, I think Apple is no longer making those moves. They're really about collaboration and working with the community.
Great.
So I'm not very, very worried about this at all.
Okay. Let's come to another question about benchmarking. People, Android developer, will try to compare between Kotlin and Swift. No. And there is maybe some benchmark that comparing performance between use Kotlin. I know that there is a lot of things existing Kotlin adapted from the Android. And maybe in your roadmap, you have this kind of preparing benchmark to convince also Android developer using Kotlin to adopt Swift, or maybe convince them with this kind of benchmark.
We don't currently have real benchmarks. We have we are measuring the performance, but we're not really micro benchmarking or proper benchmark. But benchmarks are very hard to get right. Well, the first question you ask is, are we comparing Swift to Kotlin or Swift on Android to Kotlin on Android?
Yes.
Because there's a discrepancy there, right?
Yes. Swift in Android and Kotlin on Android. I know that there is a lot of things exist.
Because when
Kotlin.
You talk about Swift on Android, you're most likely talking about Swift using JNI on Android.
Yes.
And JNI has an inherent overhead on Android. There is no discussion that we can have about that, I think. It's just, it's there, and it costs something to build a bridge, but it's not as big as most people worry about, right? We're not talking about really slow apps, but you don't want to do every millisecond or every nanosecond a function call into Swift, right? You don't want to have super high frequency communication between Swift and Kotlin. So what I'm very keen for is whenever you have a UI interaction, like a button press, or you type something in a text field or some state changes right there in the UI, that you push the data to to Swift over JNI. And whenever Swift decides something needs to change in the UI, it pushes a new state, the new UI state, into Kotlin. So then you only have very minimal interaction, either UI interactions, actions that way, state transitions the other way. And I think that way you have minimal communication while still getting all the features from Swift and Kotlin that you want in their respective place. So right now I'm working on getting Swift Composable Architecture to Android.
Okay.
But I might actually want to wait out Swift Composable Architecture too, because it's going to be more cross-platform oriented. But I already have a draft PR where I'm working on this.
Okay, great. The same.
What I envision is
going to be
a really good strong move.
Based on the same, like the TCA, the Rodex model, etc. Okay, great.
Yeah, so the idea is you'll build your reducers in Swift.
Yes.
And then any system dependencies like iOS keychain or their equivalent wallets, password wallets in Linux for Android, they can be a protocol that you implement using a class, either a keychain on iOS or something similar on Android, Linux, Windows, whatever. And the idea is that you can share this reducer and all of these reducers between platforms. So you don't need to write your business logic twice. You already have them.
Yes, great.
That's the vision that's my personal vision, but that's where I think we can go very shortly, in the very short term. And then you write your native UI in real Kotlin code. An Android developer could do that. They could write their real Kotlin code, just calling into your reducer using TCA over Swift Java.
Yes, great thing. Hope that the PR will be accepted and we see that very soon.
Yeah, they're excited for it.
Okay, thank you. There is my last question about this comparison between Kotlin and Swift. There is maybe some domains that Swift could actually surpass, maybe in performance, safety.
Yes.
I know that there is a lot of things, similarity between the two languages, but from your experience, what kind of domains that Swift is really very better or not very better than?
So Swift has ARC, right? Which is automatically reference counted objects. Mm. But in Swift, more so than Objective-C, where we care more about value types like structs. Mm. And the benefit of Swift and structs and the way it models and compiles things is that it doesn't need to allocate memory most of the time. So if you create a class, if you create an instance of a class and a function, and that class never leaves the function, Swift doesn't actually create a reference type, it creates a struct for your class. Mm. Most people don't know this, and they don't know this, but there are many of these performance optimizations that Swift can do and automatically does for you. But because Android and Java have a garbage collected language that is all heap allocated and managed by the VM, it cannot do some of these optimizations that are more low level, like stack allocating types.
Yes.
So you can't intentionally nor unintentionally leverage those in Java or Kotlin, whereas in Swift, you get them for free even when you don't write code that's supposed to run there. And then on Swift, you are, with embedded Swift especially, a lot of focus has gone more towards the performance or optimized side of things without sacrificing any safety for, like, you know, race conditions, or without data sacrificing races. Data races, right? Races. But also without sacrificing memory safety, like out of bounds checks. So Swift already has that pretty much baked into the language, and it works from as small as a microcontroller and runs efficiently there as well as C and C++, all the way up to big clouds with the same code. I don't think Kotlin will be beaten on regular UI operations in terms of performance. Okay. But if you have any cryptographic work or maybe data crunching numbers, those things, I think it will be Swift, C, C++, or Swift still. Like, you can, a native binary cannot be beaten very easily there.
Okay, great. We come to our last section about, like, closing thought and your vision. Now, if you try to get stepping back and from... You have a lot working in the Swift behind Apple platform. Can be this, could be the Swift on Android, this project, the beginning of a truly kind of truly universal cross-platform for the Swift language, and or maybe for people that are skeptical like me, should we have to give this chance for the Android Swift SDK, because there is a lot of experts that working in this project. Yeah. There is a lot of company that support. And for me, this is, for me, the same success story like Vapor. I see that. I see that, the same, because there is a lot of experience of developers that come from mistakes that we made previously in the other open source project related to Swift. You are very convinced?
I'm very convinced that this will be something to that lasts.
Hmm.
I think we have some rough edges today still, right? This is just the first release of Swift SDK for Android.
Yes.
And the Swift Java tools were only approved from here. We still want to get concurrency in Swift Java. We still want to get some of the nicer high-level types over to Swift Java so that there, you know, maybe like a list or a list will be bridged more easily. So those are definitely things we need to improve interoperability. I think the Swift SDK is already in a pretty good spot, but IDE support is lacking. So there will be rough edges today. But those are all being worked on. I think not only does this mark a really good beginning for Swift on Android, Swift on web Windows is also taking off right now, where there's a lot of ambition in the ecosystem to bring Swift to a Windows platform, so you can build model utilities there, or even full-scale apps, which also unlocks maybe Windows gaming, right? So you can build your Swift code to run on, build a Windows game. But on the flip side, there's Swift on embedded, right? And Swift on Linux. Those are also really moving very strongly. And I think on all sides, Swift is becoming a cross-platform.
Yes, great. Thank you. Thank you, Anis. I know that you will be in the iOS conference in Amsterdam. Do iOS with Ioannis, with Antoine, a lot of developers, experts. In 2 weeks, maybe, I think in 2 weeks. In
2 weeks, yeah.
11 and 12, you have a workshop and also a presentation about the Swift Android SDK, and also a workshop about embedded, using embedded Swift. You are expert in this topics. I hope that people that didn't know take their tickets to the conference will be there to speak with you, to speak with other experts. And maybe last thing to say to the community before we end with this episode.
Yeah, finish. I'm really excited by the amount of feedback that everyone has given on the SDK release and also on other platform support. I think most people don't realize how much impact you as a single developer can make to these ecosystems simply by joining the workgroup meetings and helping out. Helping out can be so, you can help out in so many ways beyond just the hardcore SDK toolchain coding. Documentation, if you run into an issue, you document it and you maybe create an article on Swift.org so the next person also knows how to fix it. Okay. Filing issues and bringing it to our attention or helping us fix these issues, right? Sometimes you actually have the skills to fix some of the bugs you're running into, but it might be daunting, right? It might be scary that you do your first open source PR. But after your first PRs, you'll start to recognize people. You'll start to know people at conferences. And it's just an excellent community to be a part of. So if you're looking to expand your horizons and become a better developer, then join us.
Yes. Thank you, Ioannis. It was a great episode with a lot of technical things. Thank you for sharing that. And we'll share all these links about the Swift SDK in the description of our episode. And see you soon. Thank you. Thank you, Ioannis.
Thank you.
Thank you.